to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. We have a cracker of a show for you tonight, gals and gents. Wash your black heads, grab a seat, and enjoy this sexy episode of The Whistler, entitled Malice.
Wait a minute. Have you heard the strange tales of the Whistler?
I'm the Whistler.
Nita, what is it? What's wrong with you?
I don't know. All of a sudden, I got a terrible feeling. A horrible feeling of foreboding. I'm frightened, Tom.
Another Sunday night, and again CBS presents The Whistler.
I, the Whistler, know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales, many secrets hidden in the hearts of men and women who stepped into the shadows. And so I tell you tonight the unusual story of Malice. Dr. Jacob Benton is the wealthiest citizen in a certain upstate county, as well as its most prominent physician and surgeon. Jacob Benton is a proud individual, proud of the fact that he comes from a long line of highly successful surgeons. And his greatest ambition is that his son, Tom, will follow in his footsteps and carry on the family tradition. Jacob has also a nephew, Harvey, son of Jacob's scapegoat brother who married a girl from the wrong side of the town and finally disappeared, leaving Jacob to take care of his young son. After finishing high school, Tom and Harvey entered medical school. Harvey followed through and is to graduate next week. But Jacob's son, Tom, at the end of his third year, wandered over to the East Bottoms at the lower end of town and met a girl, lost interest in medicine, and refused to go back to school.
Tom. Tom.
Yes, Father?
Come into the library.
What do you want?
Where have you been? It's 2 a.m.
Why, I've been to a party.
Where?
A house party.
On the other side of town?
Yes. In the East Bottoms.
You've seen that girl, that Nita again, haven't you?
Yes. What of it?
What of it? You're a disgrace to the name of Benton. I've told you time and again that you don't belong over there.
I like Nita because she's honest and genuine. She's not filled with a lot of silly ideas like Eloise.
Eloise is a fine girl. She belongs to an excellent family.
Oh, bosh. Eloise is a phony. Nita's a real fellow.
If you become serious about this girl, you'll be ostracized.
I know all about poor Uncle George. He went over to the East Bottoms and met a girl and went to the dogs. But it wasn't the girl. He was no good in the first place.
He was a stubborn fool, just like you.
I resent being told who and when and where.
Are you in love with this girl?
Yes.
I'm terribly disappointed in you, Tom. I'd prayed that you'd become a surgeon.
I don't like medicine.
You were wrapped up in your studies until you met this girl.
That's what you think.
I'm ashamed of you. Your cousin Harvey came from the lower end of town. I made him see the light. And then think of it. You about face and walk right into it. You quit school and he graduates next week.
All right, his name's Benton, too. Let him carry on. He likes medicine. It bores me.
This girl has made a fool of you. Oh, I could kill her.
I think I'd better go to bed. Good night.
Good night, young idiot. He's going to finish school if I have to...
What's all the racket about down here?
Oh, come in, Harvey.
I heard voices.
Yes, it was Tom. He's been to a party across town. Been out with that cheap girl again, that Nita.
Are you sure?
He admitted it. Says he's in love with her. Tossing his career to the winds over a woman like that.
How long has he been seeing her?
Several months, I suppose. That's why he wouldn't go back to school. All she's after is his money. How he ever met up with her, I'll never know.
I'm afraid I'm the cause of that, Uncle Jacob.
You? What do you mean?
Well, when I was home last summer, I went over there one evening, several evenings, in fact. Tom insisted on going along. I wanted to see some of the kids. I went to school with Nita and, well, I introduced them.
Well, of all things, you were born over there, and if you insisted on going back, it was your own business. But Tom is my son. You knew how I felt about it. You had no right to take him over there.
I realize that now.
Well, something's got to be done about it at once.
Yes, but what?
I'll put an end to it. Believe me, I'll find a way, and I'll stop at nothing.
For the remainder of the night, Jacob sits in the library studying the problem of what to do about Tom. And upstairs, young Harvey paces to and fro, pondering over the same question. The next morning, Harvey goes to the lower end of town to visit Nita.
Hello, Nita.
Harvey. Why, I didn't know you were back in town.
You didn't? I came home last night. I'm going back in a few days for graduation exercises. Have you missed me, Nita?
Why, yes.
Why haven't you written me in the last month or so?
Well, I've been busy.
Been across town lately?
No, why should I?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a strange thing about this section called the East Bottoms. It means more than just a place. It's a huge barrier, an insurmountable obstacle. I was born over here, same as you. But I got an idea that I could cross over, and in time I'd be accepted as one of them. But I finally realized that I would never be accepted. I'd only be tolerated. I'd never be able to practice medicine over there.
I think that's all imagination.
I told you I had definitely decided to come back here and settle down. That's why I asked you to marry me.
I'm not satisfied here.
Since when?
I've never been satisfied here.
You belong here, Nita. You'll never be able to cross over. You'd be miserable. I know.
Maybe.
And Tom would never last over here. He'd wash up, just as my father did.
What are you talking about?
I know what's happened. You're throwing me over for Tom.
What?
You're after Tom because you think he'll take you out of this. Set you up on the other side. Well, he won't. He'll have to come over here, and he won't have a dime. You're not really in love with Tom.
I am in love with him, and he loves
me. It won't last a month.
I'll make it last.
Oh, don't be a fool, Nita. Tom's father thinks you're a good-for-nothing, and he'll never change.
I don't care. I love Tom.
And when it came to a showdown, Tom would walk out on
me. I'm going to marry him. I've made up my mind.
Then there's nothing more I can say. Goodbye, Nita.
Goodbye.
That evening, Dr. Jacob comes to a decision, and he too crosses town and makes his way to Nita's apartment.
Well, what do you want to talk about, Dr. Benton?
About my son, Tom.
I see.
How long have you known him?
Oh, since last summer.
Have you seen him often?
Yes, several times a week for the last 2 months.
You think you're in love with him?
I don't think. I know I am.
I don't think he's in love with you. He's merely infatuated. You're interested in his position, his money.
You can think whatever you like.
I'm familiar with your type.
My type? What's the matter with me?
Are you aware of what you're doing to my son?
I've done nothing. Nothing at all.
You've caused him to drop his career. Tom has a tradition to fulfill. He comes from a fine family. And I won't have him throw it all to the wind because of a silly infatuation.
It isn't an infatuation.
He must marry someone in his own class. Someone who'll inspire him to carry on his career.
I didn't talk him out of his career. He says he doesn't like medicine.
The right girl wouldn't allow him to stray. She would encourage him to follow through.
The right girl. Family. Tradition. It's all a lot of bosh. Everybody in this town has made up his mind that the East Bottoms mean the difference between somebody and nobody. Well, I haven't. I'm made of the same stuff as you or Tom or anybody else over there. I have a right to a decent existence.
If it's money you want, I'll give you money to let him alone. I'll give you a lot more than you'll ever get from Tom if you marry him.
Money? You'd pay me to give him up?
Yes. Here. Here's a check for
$5,000. $5,000? Is that all your son is worth to you? $5,000? If he were my son, and I thought I could buy his future, I'd give every cent I had.
What? You mean you want more than that?
Dr. Benton, you don't possess enough money to buy me off. I don't want money.
Well, what goes on here?
Hello, Tom. You came just in time.
What are you doing here, Father?
What do you suppose?
What's he been saying, Nita?
He just gave me this check for $5,000.
For what?
To let you alone, so you can continue your career.
What?
He thinks I'm wrecking your life.
He is.
That settles it. We'll get married tonight.
You won't get married tonight, not in this state.
We'll fly over to the island. That's in another state. They don't have the 3-day law. Get your things, Nita.
If you marry this girl, I'll never give you another cent.
I'll get along. Come on, Nita.
Tom, I'll stop at nothing to break this up. I promise you'll regret this moment so long as you live.
Let's go, Nita.
So Tom and Nita rush out of the house and drive to the airport just outside of town. A storm has come up. The highway glistens in the beam of the headlights.
Rain is certainly like a cloudburst.
Maybe we shouldn't fly over tonight, Tom.
Why not?
I don't like to fly in a storm. How can you tell where to land?
Don't worry about that. I'm familiar with the field.
Who's on the island at this time of year?
Well, not many people. We've had this summer place there as long as I can remember. There's an old fellow and his wife who look after most of the places. He's also a justice of the peace. He can marry us, we'll spend the night at our place, and then we'll go someplace else tomorrow.
Tom, are you sure you want to go through with this?
Certainly. Why do you ask?
Your father meant what he said. Is it worth it to give up everything?
You're worth a dozen family fortunes.
But now that I think about it, he sort of frightened me.
He didn't frighten me.
Well, the way he said it made children up my spine.
Said what?
You'll regret this moment so long as you live.
Oh, he was just bluffing.
But somehow, I don't think he was.
He can cut me off, but we'll get along.
Tom, why don't you finish your studies?
I told you, darling. I don't like medicine, and I never will. Why should I do something I dislike just because my father and my great-great-grandfathers liked it?
Well, what do you want to do?
Oh, I don't know. But I'll find something.
Tom?
Yes? What is it? Nita, what is it? What's wrong with you?
Oh, I don't know. All of a sudden, I've got a terrible feeling. A feeling of foreboding.
Snap out of it, Nita. This isn't like you.
I know, but I can't help it. I'm frightened.
Of what?
I don't know, but I am. Oh, Tom, let's turn back. Let's wait, please.
Oh, no, you can't back out now. We're going through with this.
But he meant it. Your father meant what he said. I know he did. Please turn back.
I wouldn't turn back for all the money in the world. Don't worry, I don't need lights to land.
He should have come in a boat.
No, it's too choppy for a boat. This is the only way in weather like this.
Tom, there, I see a light. Just went on.
Yeah? Old Jenkins probably heard it.
The light is swinging.
Yeah, that's it. That's the field. It's a tiny one, but I can make it.
There's a light.
Yeah. We're all right now. Hang on. I'm going to set her down.
Dead, Pa.
I don't know yet. Good thing it didn't catch fire.
Oh, who are they?
No, no. Hold the lantern down here.
It's a woman.
Don't recognize her. Hey, this is young Tom Benton.
Oh, the girl is hurt bad. Look at her legs. They must be broken.
Yeah. Come along. We'll get him over to the house. Phone Doc Benton. This is Dr. Benton's home. This is Jenkins over on the island. Is Dr. Benton there? Oh, is that you, Harvey? Well, you better find Doc and get him over here right away. It's young Tom. He tried to land his plane and hit some trees. I don't think Tom is hurt so bad, but the girl has smashed up something terrible. I don't know who she is. Yeah, goodbye. didn't take you long to get here, Harvey. We've got him over at our place.
How in the world did Tom hit those trees? I had no trouble seeing the field.
The lights weren't on when Tom came in. I didn't even hear his motor until it was too late. He should have phoned me. He was coming. Hey, where's Doc Benton?
He was out on the case. He left his patient's house, so I left a message telling him I was going ahead and to come as quickly as possible. I brought some medical supplies.
Here we are. Tom's over there on the couch. They put the girl in the bedroom.
Few cuts on him. Don't think he has any broken bones. Oh, nasty bump on the head. Maybe a slight concussion. Well, I better have a look at the girl.
Looks to me like both her legs are broken.
Rita. Poor kid.
You know who she is?
Yes, I know who she is.
Was I right about her legs?
Yes. Both rather badly smashed up.
Where were they going on a night like this?
I imagine they came over here to get you to marry them.
Marry him? Well, I'll be darned. Wonder why he didn't phone me first.
They were in too much of a hurry, I suppose.
Too bad.
He's in a very critical condition. Extreme shock. Better get some hot water and plenty of blankets.
Yeah, right away.
Get the house as warm as possible and put more blankets on Tom.
I'll be right back. Martha?
Yes? How is she?
Harvey says she's in bad shape. Gather up all the bedclothes and coats you can. Got to cover them up good. Put on plenty of water to heat. I'll build up the fire.
Outside, the storm rages on. Harvey sits quietly beside Nita's bed, staring at her in a daze. Her breathing becomes shallow, irregular. A quarter of an hour passes. Then a plane motor is heard overhead. The ship sets down, and Dr. Jacob hurries to the house.
Tom's over there, Doc.
Tom.
He's been unconscious ever since we brought him in.
Can't find any fractures.
He's got an awful wallop on his head.
Yes. I see. No apparent concussion. He'll be all right in a short while. Get some pillows. Raise his feet. On his head, Laura.
I'll get them.
You've certainly got it hot in here.
Yeah. And Harvey had us do that because of the girl. She's pretty bad.
Girl? Where is the girl?
Oh, in the bedroom there. Harvey's in there.
I'll have a look at her. Harvey.
Oh. Hello, Uncle.
What's the matter with you?
I just...
Are you crying?
No, I'm just... This is a miserable mess.
Fine example of a doctor you are. You have to learn to be completely impersonal about these things.
Oh, I know.
What do you say is wrong with her?
Both legs are broken. She's suffering from extreme shock.
Uh-huh. Better take your bag, go out there, and give Tom a shot of adrenaline. I'll attend to the girl.
Yes, sir.
Harvey gives Tom the adrenaline and proceeds to attend to the cuts and bruises. Then he moves to the fireplace and sits staring into the blaze. The storm rages on. The minutes drag slowly along. 10, 20, 30. Then Dr. Jacob steps out of the bedroom.
Harvey.
Yes, sir?
Has Tom come out of it yet?
Not yet. He shows improvement. He'll be all right in a little while.
I see. Jenkins.
Yes, Doc?
Get us something to make a pallet. We'll carry him down to the plane, take him over to the hospital.
Sure, right away. I'll get four poles and some rope. I'll have two made in a jiffy.
Never mind two, just one. The girl is dead.
Then on the following day, Tom has fully recovered. Gradually, the events of the preceding hours begin to pass before him. The argument, the island, the plane, Nita. Nita screaming, and then the crash. And then, Nita, Nita. Where is Nita? Tom sends for his father. But Jacob is already standing in the shadows of the room.
How do you feel, Tom?
Nita. Is Nita all right?
Oh, now, take it easy, Tom. Don't get excited.
Where is Nita?
Forget about Nita for the moment. You've been pretty badly banged up. A little more and you'd have had a real concussion.
What about Nita?
If you insisted on flying to the island, why didn't you phone Jenkins to turn on the light?
He heard my motor. We were in a hurry. Besides, I saw the lights.
Jenkins said he didn't turn them on at all. Didn't hear you till just before you crashed.
That's ridiculous. Where have you got Nita?
Nita is at the undertaker's. She...
What?
She's dead.
Lord. Was she... Did it happen in the crash?
No, she died about half an hour after I got there.
You on the island?
Yes, Jenkins found you and called the house. I was out on a case and got to the island too late to save her.
What was the cause?
Her legs were broken. She died from extreme shock.
Was there nothing you could do?
Nothing.
Did you try?
I resent that inference. You should know better than that.
I'd rather have had anybody in the world there than you.
Do you know what you're talking about?
Yes, I do. You hated her. You didn't give her half a chance.
Will you shut up and stop yelling?
What did you give her?
I gave her adrenaline.
It was probably water.
I've heard enough out of you. When you come to your senses, I'll consider talking to you. Good day.
Now, Tom, his mind filled with suspicion, his heart burning with hatred, throws on his clothes, dashes out of the hospital, and goes to the island. He reviews the whole situation with Jenkins. Each incident from the time he first heard the plane motor to the moment they took him to the hospital. Tom returns to town, arranges for an autopsy, and is now talking to the autopsy surgeon.
Well, Dr. Groberg, how about it? What's your report?
Well, both legs were fractured, but there was no compound fracture. There were several minor lacerations about the body and a head contusion.
Nothing there that would have caused death?
No, nothing.
What else did you find? Any evidence of poison?
No, none.
She was suffering from shock?
Oh, naturally, but not extreme shock.
Then she didn't die from shock?
Death from shock would have been prevented by the adrenaline administered.
Then you found adrenaline present?
Yes. That is what I can't understand.
What do you mean?
Well, one of the most difficult things to diagnose is the difference between extreme shock and internal hemorrhage.
There was internal hemorrhage?
Certainly. And this one was one of the easiest to diagnose I've ever seen. As you well know, adrenaline in internal hemorrhage is absolutely contraindicated.
In other words, you think our death was caused by the administration of adrenaline?
I do, definitely. But those things happen sometimes, regardless of how hard we try.
Yes. Well, thanks, Doctor. I'll see you later. Hello, Father.
Well, have you finally come to your senses?
Yes. Yes, I have. I'd like to have a little talk with you.
Very well. What about?
I've been doing a little investigating.
Investigating? Now, what are you talking about?
I'm talking about Nita.
Are you going to start on that again?
I am. And I'm going to follow it to a conclusion.
I don't want to have anything more to do with it.
But I do.
I've had a hard day, and I don't care to listen to any more of your idiotic babblings.
How would you like to have the grand old name of Benton? The untarnished reputation of your long line of surgeons blasted to 1,000 pieces.
What are you talking about?
How would you like to have it known that you, the eminent Dr. Benton, the trusted, the revered Dr. Jacob Benton, deliberately and with malice aforethought caused the death of a girl? How would you like that?
You're insane, positively mad.
Oh, no, I'm not. I've gone back over the whole thing. I know you hated Nita. You said I'd regret the day so long as I lived. You threatened to do something, and you did. At your first opportunity.
You are crazy.
You did everything to separate us. You tried to buy her off. When that didn't work, you killed her.
Get out of here. Leave this house.
You didn't just let her die. You killed her, murdered her.
Get out.
I know what I'm talking about. I had an autopsy performed.
You what?
An autopsy.
Go on.
She didn't die of shock.
What then?
She died of a very obvious internal hemorrhage, aggravated by adrenaline.
which is contraindicated. You're a specialist in that line. You couldn't have made that mistake in 1,000 years.
But I was positive it was a shock.
You knew what it was.
No, I must have been wrought up. I could have made that one wrong diagnosis that happens once in 1,000 times.
Oh, no, I saw the body. I could tell. With as little medical experience as I've had.
Tom, you mustn't say anything further about this.
Why not?
It would ruin my reputation.
Oh, now you're worried about your reputation. What's that compared to the girl I love?
Oh, but Tom, listen to me, please.
Good night.
Wait a minute. Wait, Tom.
Well, what do you want, Harvey?
I heard you. I heard every word.
So what?
I can't let it go on like this. I can't let you do this to your father.
What's it to you? You keep out of it.
No, Tom, now listen. You're wrong.
I know what I'm talking about. Nita was murdered, and I can prove it.
Your father had nothing to do with it.
Harvey, that's enough. Leave us alone.
I won't. I can't stand by quietly and see this happen to you. I won't.
Leave this room, Harvey. Don't say another word.
Now, wait a minute. What are you trying to say, Harvey?
I did it. Your father's trying to cover up for me.
What do you mean?
He wants to save my future reputation. If it got out, it would be a blot against me.
What would be?
When Jenkins called, your father was out. He told me what had happened. I left a note for your father, took an emergency bag, and flew to the island in hopes I could do something.
Go on.
I thought Nita was suffering from shock. I was terribly upset because I was in love with her. So I gave her adrenaline. I wasn't experienced enough to recognize symptoms of hemorrhage.
Is that the truth?
Yes, now that he's told it, there's nothing I can do. I knew in an instant it was hemorrhage. When I saw the adrenaline vial, I knew what a terrible mistake he'd made. He was emotionally upset over the girl, and I wanted to give him a chance. It was done. I tried my best to pull her through, but... just a minute.
I'm sorry, Tom. Terribly sorry.
Harvey guiltily leaves the library and goes up the stairs to his room. Tom stands staring at Jacob, then drops into a chair and begins to sob softly. A few minutes pass, then a shot. Tom and his father leap to their feet, rush up the stairs and into Harvey's room. Harvey is sprawled dead over the desk, a gun in his hand, and on the desk a note addressed to Tom. Read it, Tom.
Dear Tom, I can't stand it any longer. It's been driving me crazy from the moment I did it. Nita's face is before me every second of the day and night. I was in love with her. But when she ran away with you, I lost my reason. I imagine she'd be better off dead. I was filled with hatred. I knew she was suffering from hemorrhage. But I gave her the adrenaline in a fit of revenge. Now it's driving me mad. Forgive me. Harvey.
Well, that's the end. Another case of jealousy. Another example of the futility of allowing oneself to become a victim of the green-eyed monster, jealousy.
CBS has presented The Whistler. Original music for this production was composed and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. The Whistler is written and directed by J. Donald Wilson and originates from Columbia Square in Hollywood. Next Sunday, 9:15...
I, The Whistler, will return to tell you another unusual tale.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Drunk kids driving around in machines will be the death of me, Madam Fish. Welcome back to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Now enjoy this episode of X-1, entitled Requiem.
Countdown for blast off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street & Smith, publishers of astounding science fiction, presents
X minus one.
Tonight's story, Requiem by Robert Heinlein. On a high hill in Samoa, there is a grave. Inscribed on the marker are these words:
under the wide and starry sky, dig my grave and let me lie. Gladly did I live and gladly die, and I lay me down with a will. This be the verse you grave for me. Here he lies where he longed to be. Home is the sailor, home from the sea, and the hunter, home from the hill.
These lines appear another place, scrawled on a shipping tag from a compressed air container, and pinned to the ground with a knife. It wasn't much of a fair, as fairs go. The trotting races wouldn't be held till 8 o'clock at night. The flags and bunting drooped in the gray afternoon, and the pitchmen seemed discouraged. A large black limousine stood at the side of the road, 32 cylinders purring quietly. And over the dust and the clatter of the fair, a bullhorn blasted the highest pitch.
Hurry, 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 this way to the moon rocket, the moon rocket. See it fly, the actual type rocket used by the first man to see it fly. Chills, thrills, the romance of space. You can ride in it for only $25. Hurry, hurry, hurry.
Hey, Charlie, have you got that feed tube patched?
I welded it. Good for maybe an hour.
What a crowd. They wouldn't risk a nickel to see the sun blow up.
Oh, Captain, excuse me, Captain.
Yeah? Oh, yes, sir. 50 cents to inspect the rocket. One?
Could you take a passenger this trip?
You mean you want to go up? $25.
That's right.
Yes, sir, right away. Charlie, take the pitch. Step this way, sir. Look out for the feed lines.
Oh, yes, I see them.
Hey, Doc, passenger for a checkup.
Okay, Mac.
Well, is this necessary?
Regulations.
Take off your coat, open your shirt, roll up your right sleeve.
All right.
How are things, Mac?
Slow. We're not drawing as much as the cooch tent.
It'll pick up tonight with the trotters.
I'm ready, Doctor.
All right, give me your arm. All right, breathe in. Breathe. Uh-oh. Sorry, Mac.
No go, Doc?
Cardiac condition. I couldn't certify. I'm sorry.
You mean you won't take me up?
He's the doctor.
Well, I rather expected it.
Sorry. Between you and me, we could have used the 25.
Excuse me, Captain.
Yeah?
Could you and your engineer have dinner with me after your flight?
Dinner?
At my home. My car's over there.
That's your car? The limousine?
That's right.
You serious, Mac? You want Charlie and me for dinner?
Of course.
Okay. Okay. Don't see why not? Thanks. Charlie, you had enough.
Lay off, Mac.
Oh, that's perfectly all right, Captain McIntyre. Cigar?
Thanks.
Light?
Thanks.
Yes, it's hard for me to see why any holder of a master's ticket would quit the Earth-Moon run.
I didn't like it.
Yeah, don't hand us that. It was Rule G washed you
out. All right, so I took a few drinks.
Tell me, gentlemen, are you satisfied with what you're doing now?
Are you kidding? We've been pushing the old junk heap for a year. Half the time, the sheriff has an attachment on the ship for a fuel bill. It stinks.
Would it help you to get back to the moon?
Well, sure. I could get a short-haul job hopping ore. Get my nose clean, I might even get back on the run.
Would you be open to a business proposition?
Hmm? What is it?
You own your own rocket?
Barring a couple of liens against it.
I want to charter her to take me to the moon.
You hear what he said, Mac? He wants us to fly that old heap to the moon.
He can't do it. The old boat's worn out.
Why don't you charter a regular company ship?
Oh, no, no, I can't do that. The company charter comes up before a congressional committee this year. They have to follow the regulations.
You can't pass the physical. Now, if you can afford to hire us, why don't you bribe a couple of company medics? It's been done before.
I know, but not for me. I'm D.D. Harriman.
Harriman?
You own the company. Hey, what are you giving us?
I own a large percentage of the company, but the other directors won't permit me to jeopardize the franchise.
Can you tie that, Mac? A guy with half the money in the world and he's up a crick.
Shut up, Charlie. Why do you want to go to the moon so bad, Mr. Harriman?
Well, it's the one thing I've really wanted to do all my life. I'm maybe 50 years older than you. When I was a kid, nobody believed we'd really reach the moon. You've seen rockets all your lives. When I was a boy, they laughed at the idea, but I believed. I wanted the moon then. I used to stand in the backyard and stare at it.
How far away is it, Mom?
The moon? Far enough.
Why don't people fly to the moon?
They can't.
Why not?
They just can't. Well, not now, anyway.
Someday I will.
What?
Fly to the moon.
Sure, sure. Now, come on, Del. Inside. Way past your bedtime.
There wasn't enough money for college, so I worked. Stock boy at the old Ford plant in Detroit. Accountant, credit manager for a mail order house. Then New York and Wall Street. And then transportation. The monorail line between New York and Chicago. The Atlantic pressure tunnel. And then Harriman rockets.
Del? Del, I want to talk to you.
I'm working, Charlotte.
You talk to me now, Del, or you may not get another chance.
What is it?
Fred Lott was in. You've sold out again.
I run the business, Charlotte.
Del, I'm fed up with it. Up to here. I married you because I love you. I still love you, but I'm fed up.
Now, what is it, Charlotte?
We're not young anymore. Fred tells me you've bought into a bankrupt engineering firm. Sunk every nickel in it.
Well, they own the Schwarzmiller fuel injector patents. I need them.
How many times do we have to start over? I'm tired. I'm not asking for millions. Just a little life for the two of us.
I didn't know about the divorce for a month. I lost the papers under a stack of blueprints and stock prospectus. That night I walked through the park watching the full moon move across the sky. My old friend. I could recognize the wrinkles. Chrysium, Mare Fecundatus. Mare Twinkleatus, the Lunar Apennines. It took two fraudulent bankruptcies and an investigation by the Securities and Exchange Commission before we did it. The moon. There were three injunctions on the rocket before it blasted off. I was going on the second trip, but my considerate board served a court order on me.
You can't go there.
Fred, I'll break you if it's the last thing I do.
Del, you've got a bad heart. That's no secret.
No.
If you die out there, the whole card house comes down. Now, we've got an equity in this corporation. We're going to see it protected. You've sucked us in on this wild scheme, and now that it paid off, you're going to sit right down here on Earth and see that the dividends come out on time. You're not going to the moon, Del. Forget it.
I never went. By the time my lawyers shook off the restraining orders, the first cargo rocket had crashed in the Pacific, and Congress rushed through the space precautionary act. My heart kept earthbound, and now I'm old. I've lived longer than I should, but I would not let myself die. I will not until I have set foot on the moon. There, Captain McIntyre, you asked why I wanted to go to the moon,
Well?
You find a ship, Mr. Harriman, and I'll drive her. You'll hit the moon.
All right, then we can get down to business. I'll have contracts drawn up for you. You two will have to buy me a ship. I can't do it openly, of course. My dear board of directors would find out and slap a court order on me.
Well, we can't get credit.
Oh, don't worry. I'll supply the cash in advance. Pick some ship that can be fitted for the jump. A strato yacht, Apply for a strato license. Then after it's issued, you'll move to a piece of desert. I'll find a strip and buy it.
You mean fit her out there?
Yes, yes. We'll install extra fuel tanks, change the injectors and timers for space flight.
Charlie, you think you can manage the changeover without a dockyard and shops?
Well, I'll have to have a load of power tools and a lot of time. It'll be haywired and spot welded.
Just so it doesn't blow up when I slap the keys.
It won't blow.
Well, that's what you said about the last ship.
Now, cut it out, will you? I ask you, Mr. Harriman, that last ship was a junk heap and we knew it. Now, this one, this'll be different. We're going to spend some dough and do it right. Ain't we, Mr. Harriman?
You spend all the money you want. I'll see that you get it.
$132 shares of Apex holding at 60% of par.
Check.
52 preferred of Spaceways fuel, 50% off par.
Check.
That's the list. Oh, Mr. Harriman, there's a process server outside.
Yeah? What is it?
I don't know, sir, but I think it's a subpoena.
Oh, I was expecting that. Ashley, get Mr. Caymans on the phone. I think it's time for my lawyer.
May it please your honor, counsel representing Mr. Harriman's relatives contend that his behavior for the past few weeks gives clear indication that a mind brilliant in the world of finance has become senile. They petition you to declare him incompetent and to assign a conservator to protect his financial interests and those of his heirs. May I suggest that in the last few words, my opponent gave away his entire thesis. It is evident that the petitioners believe that my client should conduct his affairs in such a way as to ensure that his nephews, nieces, and their issue will be supported in unearned luxury for the rest of their lives. Therefore, we pray this court will confirm my client in his right to do what he likes with his own. Deny this petition and send these meddlers about their business.
Well, Caymans,
It could go either way.
He might rule against me?
He might. We'll know tomorrow.
Here it is. Eccentric millionaire disappears.
Yes.
You eccentric, Mr. Harriman?
Well, they used to call me crazy, but that depends on your credit rating.
A bench warrant under contempt proceedings has been issued.
They won't find me out here. How is the work going, Charlie?
My end's in pretty good shape.
Well, are you ready to go? My nephews will have detectives out looking for me.
Well, I could run those calibration tests tonight. Take till midnight. After that, it's up to the Commodore here.
There. There she is, Mr. Harriman. That's the job that'll take you to the moon.
It's a good ship. Isn't it?
Hey, Mac, stop the car.
Yeah.
All right.
He's out?
Look at him. Where's his medicine?
Vest pocket. Here, break the glass. Hold it on his nose.
He looks lousy.
Yeah. There. He's breathing easy. Come around soon.
Mac, we ain't gone through with this.
Why not?
It's murder. He'll never stand up under the initial acceleration.
Maybe not, but that's what he wants to do. You heard him.
Well, I don't like it. He's an okay old buzzard.
What do you want to do with him? Send him back to Kansas City so his no-good nephews can shut him up in the cellar?
No, but...
Okay, then. Now get out there and make your setup for those test runs. Get that ship ready to fly.
Hey. Hey, you. You.
Me?
How many other people are there out in this desert?
What can I do for you?
You James McIntyre?
Hey, Mac.
What's the matter, Charlie?
You McIntyre?
Yeah.
I'm the deputy federal marshal in this district. I got a warrant for your arrest.
What charge?
Conspiracy to violate the Space Precautionary Act. I suppose you're Charles Schwartz. I got one for you, too.
Thanks.
And a man named Harriman. Got a court order to put seals on your spaceship.
We haven't got any spaceship.
What's that, a kitty car?
Strato yacht.
Yeah? Well, I'll put seals in until a spaceship shows up. Where's Harriman?
In the shed.
What shed?
Oh, my knuckle. That's the one I broke playing football. I'm always hurting that finger.
We gotta hurry. Get Papa to the cabin and strap him into his hammock.
Right. So long, deputy. Oh, my knuckle.
She's warm, Charlie. Everything set back there?
How do I know? I didn't have time to run tests.
Tough. You all right, Mr. Harriman?
I think so, but these straps are tight.
Have to be when we blast off. All set, Charlie. Give me control.
Check. Test keys.
One bank.
Check.
Two bank.
There's an auxiliary out.
We don't need it. All right, boy, hang on. Let's go. How are you, Pop?
I'm doing fine. Couldn't be better.
You better stay in your hammock. I'll loosen the straps a little. What is it?
Nothing. Just go easy on that side.
You ain't fooling me none, Pop. You got a couple of busted ribs. There isn't much I can do till we ground. You take a Neobaritol and I'll wake you when we cut jets.
No, no. No, I'll stay awake.
Okay, just as you say, Pop. She's on automatic, Charlie. How are the tubes holding up?
Fine, tight as a drum.
She handles nice.
How's Pop?
Alive, but he's in bad shape.
How bad?
Cracked a couple of ribs in the takeoff. I don't know what else.
You think he'll last the trip?
His heart was pounding like an off-time valve.
Well, he'll last. He's tough.
Tough? He's delicate as a canary.
I don't mean that. He's tough down inside where it counts. Just the same, you better set her down awful easy if you want him alive.
I'll make a full swing around the moon and ease her in an involute approach curve. It'll go fine if we got enough fuel.
Somebody call me?
Something wrong, Pop?
Thought somebody was calling me. I must have been asleep.
I swung your hammock around. We're breaking now. There she is ahead.
The moon. I've seen 1,000 photographs. There. That's Copernicus. Tycho.
You know it all right, Pop.
Where are you landing?
Mare Imbrium, between Aristillus and Archimedes.
Oh, that's about 40 miles from Luna City, isn't it?
Yeah.
It won't be easy landing without ground approach radar, will it?
I've done it before.
Not without a second pilot to punch the statometer.
You ought to have a mate's ticket, Pop. You know the whole routine. You must have really studied up.
Yes, that's all I could do, study, until now.
Oh, look at the moon.
I feel as if I'm coming home.
Yeah. Charlie.
Yo.
I'm taking her in. Cut in full power.
Make it good, Mac. Pop can't take a rough one.
Shut up and give me the power. I'll do my best. Okay. Datameter setting punched. Hang on. Here we go.
That was a lousy landing, Mac.
Statometer drift.
How's our passenger?
Quiet. Now look.
I wouldn't make any bets. That landing stunk.
Will you shut up? I did my best. Hey, Pop.
He's alive. There's blood in his mouth.
He's trying to say something. Take it easy, Pop. We're down.
Oh, where?
Take it easy.
Vacuum suits. Where are they?
Steady, Pop. You can't go out there yet. We've got to give you some first aid.
Give me that suit.
What do you think, Mac?
Might as well. Get the suit out of the locker. There, we'll use the big one. Be more comfortable.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. Pop. Easy now.
Hurry, hurry.
All right, pull it up. Seal these zippers, Charlie. Take it easy. All right. The helmet. Air diaphragm set.
Check.
Air valve.
Set.
Lift it on him.
Don't hit him.
All right. Come on, Charlie. Get into your suit and we'll carry him out the back. Easy. Easy with him.
Okay. Okay. You all right, Pop?
Outside. Take me outside.
His left leg is gone. Get your shoulder under it.
Right. Open the lock.
All right, Pop. Come on. We're going out on the moon.
The moon.
All right. I'm going to leave you out here to look around while we get ready for the hike to town. You all right?
The moon.
We have to break out air bottles and rig a stretcher. It's 40 miles into the dome. Charlie, prop something behind his head.
Okay. You comfortable, Pop?
We'll be back soon.
Moon. I can feel the pumice dust. And it doesn't hurt anymore. Why, there's the earth overhead. The earth and the sky in green blue. I'm on the moon. I'm on the moon.
Del? Del?
Charlotte? I thought I heard somebody call my name. Yeah, I'm getting old. My mind wanders.
Del? Del?
Charlotte?
Del?
That is you, isn't it? I made it, Charlotte. I'm on the moon. You didn't understand. You were afraid I wouldn't take care of myself. But I made it. I'm on the moon.
Del.
I'm on the moon.
Come on, Charlie. We better get Pop going. Here, give me a hand getting him on the stretcher.
Never mind the stretcher, Mac.
What's the matter?
He won't need it. He's dead.
Oh. Better get out the pumice skis and the air bottles. It's a long walk to town.
Yeah. What about him?
Looks as if he's resting, doesn't he? Propped up looking out on the pumice.
Well, he hit the moon. Come on. Let's start walking.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of astounding science fiction. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was an NBC Radio Network production.
Listening to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Join us again next week at the same time on the mighty KONR. Don't forget to play What Will Mrs. Thompson Say at LGAP.com. Now, stay tuned for the Sasquatch Report.